You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org. Would you like to rip fresh greens from your own backyard, even in winter? It sounds impossible until you get a tour of Caleb Warnock's winter garden. I just got his book about it. I'm not talking about greens in Florida or even in Vancouver. Caleb Warnock lives near Salt Lake City, Utah, with lots of altitude and lots of snow. He's the author of many popular books on self-sufficiency, healthy foods, and tips from the pioneers. Caleb Warnock, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you for having me.
We can buy all sorts of greens and tropical fruits even, trucked in or flown across the ocean. Why should we go to a lot of work to grow our own food?
Well, I think if people are either sort of interested in this or they're not, they've already discovered that if you want to take control of your health and your budget, then you have to do some things on your own. You can't just rely on everyone else to do things for you. And I think the biggest reason, however, is flavor. Nothing that you can buy tastes like what you can grow.
And I think that flavor is telling us something, Caleb. I think that the vitamins and all the things that have been lost in shipping, and in fact, they just grow foods that will ship well and don't taste good. So there's a lot to be said for growing your own food.
Well, worse than that, they irradiate it, and you know, before it comes to the grocery store, they put all kinds of pesticides and insecticides.
Yep.
You know, herbicides, and they do all kinds of crazy things that, you know, you would never do when you're growing it in your own backyard. So it's better all the way around.
What drove you personally to rediscover lost skills and aim for better self-sufficient foods?
I was really lucky to have grown up in the last kitchens and gardens of the people who were really connected to the earth. I knew my great-grandparents on both sides of my family. I grew up with my great-grandparents on both sides of my family. This is how they lived every day. And, you know, as after I lost my great-grandparents, then I just wanted to keep doing what they were doing. I mean, I had wonderful memories of being in their gardens and eating in their kitchens. And the longer I have lived, the more I have discovered that there's just no equivalent to making it yourself, growing it yourself, or cooking it yourself.
One of your books is titled The Forgotten Skills of Self-Sufficiency Used by the Mormon Pioneers. Caleb, has a Mormon background helped you recover these lost skills?
Well, you know, you're either born with your background or you're not, and that book is not about religion, but these are the people that, you know, they came here into the middle of this crazy place where no one thought anything would ever grow, and they made it work. And those tips, those skills, those things that they knew how to do are almost gone today, and that's why so many people, I think, have responded to my books and my videos and my classes, and because we live in a world today where everybody has a skill or a thought or an idea in the internet, but a lot of that is not based in actual knowledge. Like, people are offering opinions about things that they've never done, never tried, when they offer photos from the first day of something instead of the fifth year of something. And so I think that's why people have responded, because this is the way our family lives every day. This is the way we have lived for years. And people, I know we've had thousands of people come here to our gardens and tour them. And when they see this working firsthand, I think they feel inspired. They feel like, oh my goodness, look how it's being done here at my house as compared to what we get out of the grocery store, or, you know, whatever the skill is. And this can be done. And this is the way it was done for thousands of years before the invention of the modern grocery store.
Well, this is one of the things I admire about your YouTube videos and now your book, and that is that when you make a mistake, you don't hide it. There's the photo of the dead plant, and you tell us what you did wrong and what you could do better next time. Do you have a couple of examples of epic failures that we can avoid?
I don't believe there is failure. I believe that there's honesty. I think what is missing today from the world, in great part, is people are very, if they think they have created something successful, they want to talk all about it, but they don't often want to talk about what it took to get from zero to success. And that's something that our ancestors would never have. I mean, they didn't consider failure to be a bad thing. They considered it to be an education. And I consider it to be an education. And I think people do a real disservice to people, especially in the homesteading community and the self-sufficiency community, when they want to go out and say, oh, look what I've done, look what I've done. And they don't want to tell people all the steps and all the work that it took to get there. So to me, there's no failure about it. It's just like, for example, right now, one of the things that people are really responding to are my solar thermal and geothermal greenhouses. I have spent years now designing and redesigning and rebuilding, and now people come to my property in the middle of the winter, and I have four greenhouses that don't use any electricity or artificial heat. They're just completely heated by nature. And they walk in and they go, oh my gosh, who taught you how to do this? And I say, well, I taught me how to do this over the last 15 years. I taught me how to do this. I've spent lots of time and lots of money, and I don't consider any of my early attempts to be a failure. I consider it to be an education and necessary steps.
Well, this is one of the reasons I wanted your book, Winter Gardening, because I'm just about to build a geothermal greenhouse this coming spring, and I've been looking at all sorts of videos, of course, on YouTube. My plan is to lay about 300 feet of drainage pipe about 5 feet down with some gravel around it, and then I will probably use electricity and a fan to blow that earth cool when I need it in the summertime and hot, you know, when I need it in the wintertime. What did you do? What has been your most successful geothermal setup, let's say that?
Well, I hope I can be honest with you. What you have just described is not a good way to go about doing it.
Okay.
I hope that's not too blunt and too honest. And what you have described is exactly what people come up with when they do searching on the internet. And a lot of that information is from people who have not done it, have not tried it, and that method is extremely expensive. It'll never pay off in the end, and it doesn't, you know, we have to work hand in hand with Mother Nature. I think that's something that people have kind of lost sight of a little bit today, is that when you work hand in hand with Mother Nature, she will work with you. And we, for some reason as a society, we have started to, I don't know exactly where this comes from, but we want to fight Mother Nature every step of the way. And what you're describing is kind of a method of trying to, you know, fight a war against Mother Nature. And I've had a lot of people come to my classes and read my books. And my greenhouse classes are probably some of my most popular, most attended classes. I've had people fly in from Alaska to take my greenhouse classes because they build what you're describing and it does not give them the results that they want. And then they come to me and they say, okay, now how do I fix this? How do I make this actually work? That happened even yesterday. Somebody was putting a picture up on a Facebook homesteading group that I belong to saying, this is the existing greenhouse. It didn't work. It was a total failure over the winter. Now what do I do? It's a lot better to do it right the first time instead of spending a lot of time and money to discover that you're going to have to retrofit things.
Well, what should I be doing then?
Well, I mean, that's not a question that I can answer in 60 seconds, but, you know, I think what's important for people to know is that all of the commercial greenhouses that you see are not designed for winter growing because they do not have thermal mass. You can have a geothermal greenhouse or you can have a solar thermal greenhouse. I'm at 5,000 feet. My coldest temperature this winter was 19 degrees below zero. I have growing things in my unheated. I mean, the greenhouses are heated by the heat of the earth, and they have to be designed in a way where they can capture the heat during the day and release that heat during the night and rely on the heat of the earth during the night to keep the greenhouse from freezing. And that has taken a long journey for me to figure out how that can be done, but it is, once you figure out how to do it, it works gorgeously, and people, I have online classes about this, I have video tours about this, I think this is so important, because people today have forgotten that before World War I, everyone grew food through the winter. Today we kind of think, oh my goodness, that's kind of like a parlor trick to grow food through the winter. We forget that if people didn't know how to grow food through the winter, we wouldn't be here today, because they didn't have any choice or any option in the matter. You know, they perfected that skill, and they perfected that art a long time ago, a long, long time ago. So it's not difficult and it's not hard. You just have to pay attention to the natural signs and be able to work together with Mother Nature.
Okay, now part of the challenge for folks with a greenhouse or with cold frames is to remember that in the Northern Hemisphere, I'd say August is the second planting season. And plants can often survive in the cold, but they don't grow a lot unless they get a good start. But Caleb, how do we get cold weather plants going when it's really hot out in the summer?
Well, the only thing that you need to start in the summer are things, and when we're talking at the very end of the summer, like the last week of July is when you want to start your root vegetables. If you're going to have root vegetables that you want to be able to harvest before December 31st, they need to be planted in the very last weeks of July and the first weeks of August. Everything else can be planted later. And it's just a matter at that point, they germinate pretty easily because the soil is pretty warm. At that point, it's just a matter of making sure that they don't dry out during the germination period.
The other tricky part about winter gardening, I guess, is to get actual growth. I've had experts tell me their winter greenhouse is like a vegetable storage place, and what you pick is always fresh. But have you found greens that can be cut and regrow again, even in cold and dim winter light conditions?
Well, that's all we do. I mean, I don't know if you know this, but after my first book became a national bestseller, I had a lot of the rarest seeds in the world because I had spent years reading books that were 300 and 400 years old and then having help with seed banks to track down the last of these seeds that have been going extinct. And today, because of all of that, because my book became a national bestseller, I own a seed company. And no one in the world has tested, I have so many varieties of the winter growing vegetables that don't exist anywhere else, that you can't buy anywhere else, because this is not a segment of gardening that anybody else has been focusing on. And so when you have the correct seeds and the correct plants, you have to remember that our ancestors were not growing the same things in the winter that they were growing in the regular growing season. So when you have the correct plants and the correct seeds, then you have success in the winter garden. And so, yes, every green thing that we grow is cut and come again. And all of the bulb varieties, like, for example, the best winter growing turnip is something called the Vertumaro turnip, which I'm the last grower of in the United States. And these are things that were widely, widely available 200 years ago, even 150 years ago, but today they're almost extinct. And so you have to have the right things if you want to grow stuff during the winter. It's not, my greenhouses are not a food storage. And if you've seen my video tours, you know that that's not what's going on in my greenhouses, not in my cold frames, not in my all-natural hotbeds. We grow 365 days a year. I start seeds directly in the ground in every month of the year, just like the people who came before us used to do.
Do you want to give us a web address where people can get these seeds?
It's seedrenaissance.com.
Okay. Now, I just want to say I spend most of my time interviewing climate scientists from all over the world. That's what I do on Radio EcoShock. And they're warning loudly that we may see even more heat waves than we've had. And you've worked on how to garden when it's too cold, but what about when it's too hot?
Yeah, too high. Well, last year, for the first time in history, I had in my garden 100-degree temperatures in the first week of June. And the National Weather Service in the United States about a week ago predicted that we're going to repeat that again this summer. Their prediction is that we're going to have the hottest, earliest spring on record. And if you don't know how to garden correctly, that can wreak havoc on your garden. When you're dealing with heat like that, you have to have short day count vegetables. And short day count vegetables are vegetables that go from seed to harvestability in a very short amount of time. Most of what is sold in the United States today is medium to long day count vegetables, but those don't do well in this kind of heat situation. And a lot of people struggled, at least in the western United States last year, a lot of people struggled because we had these temperatures that we had 100-degree temperatures in every week of June, and that's not typical or normal. And this year we may hit triple digits at the end of May is what they're predicting. So we have to change. We have to be able to adapt. One of the things that people have been responding to is that I've been teaching people how to plant food forests. Food forests are perennial vegetables, trees, bushes that you can put out, and then they follow Mother Nature's cycle and plant themselves from year to year. I have a garden that is 60% self-seeding and perennial in the summer and 80% in the winter, so that I don't have to go out and plant a lot of stuff every year. It just, this is the way that, you know, people gardened, you know, for most of history, is they weren't out there planting rows of things every spring, despite what the movies may show you. That's not how it was happening. They relied on perennial and self-seeding vegetables to feed themselves, and that's the way that successful gardeners will continue to go forward, because those vegetables plant themselves and reseed themselves at the moment they need to, working on Mother Nature's schedule without humans trying to guess when the best time is to do that.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. My guest from Utah is Caleb Warnock. Now, you could call it permaculture, what you've just talked about, I think, or you could call it old school gardening, but can you tell us, what is the prepping or self-sufficiency scene like in Utah?
Well, I may not be a good person to ask about that, because I tell everyone who will listen that we should stop being prepared and start being self-reliant. One of the things that really concerns me is that people think that preparedness means putting thousands of dollars worth of freeze-dried garbage into some dusty storage bin, and then they don't feel that they need to learn to grow something on their own. And I'm sort of famous for telling people that when the zombie apocalypse happens, if I have to live on freeze-dried garbage, I'm going to run out and ask the zombies to eat me first, because that's not something I'm willing to do. I think that we need to have preparedness in the form of self-reliance today. A lot of people think that they can just spend money and put something away, but that is not self-reliance. And I'm also kind of famous for telling people that I don't care about you, but I do care about your children and your grandchildren. I think that we are doing a huge disservice by not. We teach our children and our grandchildren the fine art of living off of a credit card and watching the video games and watching television, and we don't get them out into the garden. They can't tell a weed from a vegetable. They don't know. If worse came to worse, they wouldn't know how to grow anything in the most ideal growing conditions, let alone the more difficult growing conditions, let alone in the winter or anything like that. And that's not their fault. That's our fault for not teaching them those skills. And I really feel strongly, and I'm very passionate about the fact that our kids and our grandkids are going to need some self-reliance skills, and that we are doing them a disservice when we don't take the time to teach them those things. So stop preparing, stop buying garbage to put away, get out into the garden and plant something, even if it's just a raspberry bush. I like to tell people, just even if it's if you do nothing else, children will respond to raspberries and strawberries, and they will grow up remembering that at least there was something edible within their space.
Do we need a few acres and a homestead to grow food, or can our listeners really do very much in their backyards or, say, in a community garden?
What a waste of space it would be to have. I have lots of friends who have lots of acres. I had someone who was talking to me yesterday who has 150 acres, and they are completely overwhelmed and lost and have no idea what to do. My wife and I live on an acre and a third, and we use about a third of that as far as growing goes. Again, this goes back to the way this has been done historically. Nobody historically was feeding their family on these huge tracts of land, because every square foot of land has to be correctly managed. So they knew how to grow a lot of food in a small space. I was accused once, after someone had come to tour one of my greenhouses in the winter. I was accused of, they went on social media and openly accused me and my family of secretly being on food stamps and on welfare, because they said there's no way that Caleb could be feeding himself and his family on this small, in this small of a greenhouse through the winter. And that just, we still laugh about that at my house, because that just shows what an absolute lack of knowledge they have. Because people assume that you grow a head of lettuce and then you rip the whole head of lettuce out of the ground, and so they see that there's 20 heads of lettuce in my greenhouse in December, and they think I have 20 heads of lettuce, when in fact you cut the head of lettuce and it grows right back within 3 weeks. So it's a rotation. That's the way people have fed themselves. We know how, and I've actually written a whole book called Tiny Garden, Huge Harvest, because doing it on a smaller scale is the way to be successful. Getting 150 acres is not the way to be successful. Nobody can manage 150 acres without a tractor and gasoline and all kinds of things that have not been used throughout the history of the world.
You've also written a book called Stress-Free Vegetable Gardening. Can you share a couple of tips to avoid working too hard for those veggies?
Yeah, so I'll give you a tip. I think one of the most important things is that people should know is as soon as the ground thaws out, there's a whole host of things, because right now, where I live, the ground is beginning to thaw out. So I have an email newsletter, and I just sent out my newsletter telling everybody, as soon as the ground thaws out, here's an entire list, vegetable by vegetable, of things that we should be planting now, especially this year when we're going to have an early spring. For example, if you want to do rutabagas, they have to be planted within the next week, or they will not produce a bulb successfully this year if they're not planted within the next week. Carrots and parsnips need to be planted immediately, because carrots and parsnips both have a longer germination time, and they need some colder temperatures, and they need continual moisture. And so now is the time to plant, you know, probably 40 to 50 things that I listed in my email, so that you don't have to water them. All you have to do is either throw the seed out or lightly rake it in and let Mother Nature take care of it, because there will still be rains. The soil is moist right now, and these are vegetables that need cooler soil temperatures in order to successfully germinate and to start make something edible before the tremendous heat comes, and it is going to come.
And I'd like listeners to know about the range of books that you've written. Do you want to tell us a few titles, including a couple on the specialty foods that you have explored?
Specialty foods, that's a funny term. I think you're probably referring to I have a book called The Art of Baking with Natural Yeast. We only use natural yeast. Most people don't know that all the yeast that you buy today in the grocery store has been genetically modified and is patented, and you don't have to take my word for that. You can go look up all of the patents for it. The natural yeast has not been sold in the grocery store for decades, and natural yeast, because it was created through a process of gene mutation called mutagenesis, no longer amidates the gluten that is naturally found in wheat and is making everybody sick. So natural yeast will make regular wheat flour safe for people to eat without gluten intolerance or celiac disease. I have a couple of books on herbal medicine. We have all kinds of books on gardening and mindful meals. And I don't know, I've written, right now there are 19 books that are available. There are more that are coming out. I have a book that I'm very proud of on stevia. Stevia is an herb, a green herb that has very sugary leaves that is the answer to a lot of problems that people are having today health-wise. I'm a huge believer in stevia. I've been growing stevia for years, and a lot of people have no idea what stevia is or how to use it, and so I wrote a whole book on that. It's the first book of its kind that's ever been published, and I continue today to go out and, you know, even last night I was researching chia seeds, and there's actually a version of the chia seed that grows wild where I live, and, you know, these things are very difficult to come by, but I'm managing to get my hands on some, and I just continue to explore. I've been teaching homesteading classes for people, and you know, I'm interested in anything that we can do to make our lives easier and to make ourselves more self-reliant. But again, my mantra is to make sure that our children and our grandchildren are going to be prepared to live the life. A lot of people say to themselves that they have passed on the most important values of their ancestors to their children. But if you stop and think about that, that is not true. And I'm very concerned about that.
Okay, so how do we connect with you, Caleb? Do you have a blog? Do you have a Facebook page going? How do we get this newsletter? Tell us about that.
I'm on Facebook. You can find me on Facebook. Just type Caleb Warnock into Facebook, and I will be there. And my website is seedrenaissance.com. You can sign up for my newsletter at seedrenaissance.com. And there's usually free offers in most of my books. I send free seeds and yeast and all kinds of things to tens of thousands of people. So it's not too hard to find me.
Great. Well, I just got one of them from Utah. We've been talking with the best-selling author, Caleb Warnock. I've been lurking around his YouTube videos and blog, and I just ordered his book on backyard winter gardening. And you can find links for all of this in my weekly Radio EcoShock blog at ecoshock.org. Caleb, thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.